Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
I'm Greg Bresnitz.
And I'm Darren Bresnitz. We're the host of Snacky Tunes.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn.
If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Native on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Brianna Kurtz. Each week, this show features a U.S. or international location and uses food and drink as a gateway to explore and celebrate the cuisine and culture of a destination. Part travel show, part current affairs, this show takes the opportunity to examine the nuances that help define a place by using the eyes, ears, and taste buds of farmers, chefs, journalists, and the like. This week, I am in Penang, Malaysia, and today I am talking to Pearlie Key, resident and cooking instructor, about her hometown. So hi, Pearlie. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you very much, Brianna, for giving me this opportunity to showcase to you our Penang food, which is also a very big part of Malaysian food, yeah?
Well, let's talk about that. So I think for most Americans, I think I can say that Malaysian food is pretty much a big blind spot. We don't know much about it. We don't eat it quite often. So maybe you could break down for me, what are the hallmarks of Malaysian cuisine?
Most of our Malaysian cuisine uses fresh ingredients because we have bountiful of fresh galangal, or some people call them blue ginger. We have fresh turmeric. We have lemongrass. We have... these are the common ones that has been used, yeah? So in most of our curries, these fresh ingredients will be used as the spice paste. That's why the word rempah comes from the Malay. Rempah means spice paste, yeah? And the Nonyas caught on with all their own rempahs, and we come up with all kinds of mixes done by the Chinese and what have you from the Indians, from the Indian Muslims, from South India, yeah? And then we have like Nonya food, we have Indian Muslim food, or you call Nasi Kanda food, we have Eurasian food, we have Chinese food, we have Malay food, we have Northern Indian food, Southern Indian food, vegetarian Indian food for varieties of vegetarian, whatever you are inclined to, with ginger, without ginger, with garlic, things like that, yeah.
It sounds really healthy based on all those ingredients you listed at the beginning, the galangal, the turmeric, the herbs. That's and it also sounds like a huge melting pot and a fusion. I know I've been walking around and I feel like I'm on one side of the street and I'm in India eating Punjabi food, and then I walk across the street and I'm in China eating Chinese food. So maybe you can tell me a little bit about how all this got here.
Well, I would say a big influx of migration happened would have been a massive one, would have been like 200 years ago. Yeah, well, I think the East India Company plays a very big part, bringing the Indian from India for rubber tappers and street laborers, so that by that time, Port Swettenham became a place where we are, all the immigrants were arriving. And then with the British going into China to get tea over, you have high tea in England, right? So to get tea over, you also have the Chinese coming over for tin mining, yeah? So when they all come over, we were all immigrants, and the males were coming, the men folks were coming for better opportunities, yeah? So when these people come, who is there to cook for them? They have to assign someone, either your cousins, their brothers, or whoever, to take turns to cook. Yeah, I think generally this is what I heard from my dad when I was very young, is that they will take turns to cook, and there will definitely be one who is much more talented than the other. And somehow or other, he will be nominated to be the cook for the community. And these are the people in the end that owns restaurants or become so good in their cooking. They have coffee shops and things like that. Yeah.
And so out of that culture of labor and immigration, is that where the rise of kind of street food culture came as well?
Yes. Initially, the men worked so hard by the jetty, on the streets and all that. They have no place to go home. So of course it's, oh, lunchtime comes. And then the street vendor with the kanda food, yeah, with two baskets, sitting on the wooden bench. And, you know, as you come, okay, this is what you want. Flirt your rice with curries and things like that and hand it out to you, yeah? And come tea time, you have your mee goreng, or the Chinese call that kelinga mee. That's fascinating, the kelinga mee, because how do you know that the Indians will know how to use yellow noodles? And cook stir-fry mee, the Chinese yellow noodles, cook the Indian spicy way with sweet potato sauce. It's yummy. Yeah. And the Chinese don't know how to speak Indian or don't know how to speak English. So they refer this to their kelengami, the Indians who fried the noodle. Yeah. So they called it a simple term. So most of the food in Penang, if it is on the Chinese street hawkers, you can hear them being still labeled by the Chinese way. Cha kway tiao is actually stir-fried rice noodle. Yeah, Hokkien mee is because the clans of the Hokkiens, they innovated this prawn soup. Yeah, wonton noodle is for the people who are from Cantonese, from Canton, things like that. So where you are, the food is actually named after you. Yeah, things like that. And another fascination is the chendol. If you have gone to our street to eat our dessert, yeah, come like tea time, high tea, when they're having their stir-fry Indian spicy noodle, ooh, they'll be sweating and all that, and there you are having chendol, sweet with palm sugar, salty with coconut cream on your rice noodle, and with what? Very, very soft-cooked red beans.
It
is funny, yeah. People will just shake their head thinking how we eat our red beans in the dessert.
Well, and I have noticed, I think traveling around Asia for a few weeks, that the most interesting place I have been is Penang, because when I'm in Vietnam, I'm eating Vietnamese food. Mm-hmm. You may have one or two things, and there's certainly a legacy there. You know where these dishes are coming from, immigration from the Chinese or from other ethnicities in the past, but I'm still eating modern day Vietnamese food.
Yeah.
And the same when I'm in Thailand, I'm eating modern Thai food, again, with history. But when I'm here, again, I can be eating Chinese food 1 minute and Indian food the next minute and Malay food the next minute. And then, you know, there's some other Western things thrown in there too. So is everyone eating everyone else's food, or do the Indians stick to their community and the Malays stick to their community, or is everyone mixing in?
This is what you call the tapestry of food in Penang is called rojak.
What is rojak?
Rojak means a mixture of Indian, a mixture of Malay, a mixture of Chinese. Yeah, predominantly these three main races. But not forgetting the Indian Muslims, the Eurasians. They play a very big part in our food too. One fascination would be our string hoppers. If you have eaten it, yeah? The origin from string hoppers will be from Sri Lanka. It's actually rice noodle, like rice vermicelli. In Sri Lanka, you would have eaten it with sodi or savory curry. Yeah? But in Penang, you are eating it with jaggery, a palm sugar and grated coconut. It's a very light snack for us. It can be in the morning, can be in the afternoon, or it can be a light dinner at night. Yeah. You must try that. It's really lovely, yeah?
Well, you've been listing all these dishes, nasi kandar, hokkien mee, curries, and these are definitely the hallmark dishes. When you're walking around town, you see them everywhere.
That's right.
But when you're eating, what is everyone drinking with all of these things?
We are so, so blessed, yeah? Everybody likes black coffee, the local black coffee, or they like black coffee with milk, and they like teh tarik, pooling tea.
If you see them, tell me more about that.
The pooling tea, yeah. Actually, the pooling tea is just a way to cool it down, because when it's using boiled water to brew the tea, it's so hot. So when you serve to your customer, they would have to blow, you know. But what they did was, our Asian people are very, very warm, in the sense that if they see you having a hard time doing things like that, they will try to think of the way to make you enjoy the food. So they start to pull the tea. And as they pull the tea, by the time it comes to you, it's so fluffy. When you drink it, it's just nice for you and you enjoy it because it's so comforting, yeah? And even like coffee, you never imagine our coffee here is sweet. We are really sweet people, yeah?
I've noticed that.
And not forgetting all our fruit juices.
In
we have
very fresh.
Nutmeg, we have pineapple, we have umbra. Have you eaten umbra? It's like a gooseberry, a green one, and then they will crush it and they liquidize it and they add water, and then when they serve you, they put a sour plum, a preserved sour plum inside. When you eat it, rather than it become very soury, it's actually sweet. The magic of the preserved salted plum mixes with the sourish umbra, the drink just turns so sweet and so refreshing. Yeah,
and you need that here because it's quite hot.
We love this, yeah.
And what about the other night we were walking around the market having some dinner?
Michael Jackson.
I know you want to talk about Michael Jackson. So tell me, what is a Michael Jackson?
It's fun, isn't it? We love Michael Jackson here.
And we have
this soya bean. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we always love soya bean. And this soya bean man will also sell chin chow. It's actually a kind of herb. When you extract the juice, it turns black. And it becomes gelatinous, like jelly-like. Yeah, very soft, light
you
jelly.
You call it grass jelly.
Yeah, we call that glass jelly. Or we call that chin chow.
Chin chow.
So they'll be grated into a container. And they add sugar syrup in it to make a cordial. And it's sweet and blackish, yeah? And so when Michael Jackson became very big, yeah, so they added these two together, black and white. They put this white soya milk, yeah, which is white, and with this half of chin chow into the drink, said, I want a Michael Jackson, so black and white. And since then, everybody called this drink Michael Jackson, and we just simply adored him, even until today.
Well, it was delicious. Very refreshing, very fresh, very clean flavors. And yeah, especially if I was eating something a little bit spicy, it kind of helped turn down the heat.
That's
a little
right.
bit.
Yeah.
So, well, let's move on a little bit. I want to talk about your work in food tourism.
Yeah.
You are an instructor, a chef.
Yeah.
How is food tourism growing here, in your experience?
I think basically our Penang people, Malaysian people, we are very proud of our food. Yeah. Try as we might, we will stick to our authentic food. Yeah. That is who you are. It reminds you of where you come from. And if you eat the food and you see the person preparing the food for you, it speaks a lot of him toying it day and night. Yeah. So because of that, we always promote our local economy, our food, our people. There's a story behind them doing the food. It can also be passed down from their parents, their grandparents, and some of them, they protect their recipes so hard that only their own kinfolks will do that trade. Take for example, Peanut pancake. If you go everywhere in Penang, in some of the communities, if you ask each other, you ask them, I love the peanut pancake in Pulau Tikus. Oh, that belongs to my uncle. And you say, oh, and you go to Pulau Tikus and say, oh, I love the peanut pancake in Perak Road. Oh, that's my nephew, you know. So they only share this treat among themselves. so that it will be, a family business. Mm-hmm. So this is how the food is being preserved, loved, respected by the people here, because they just don't want anything to be added in. There may be a few variations, like, it is very difficult, like what some people ask me, what's the best char kway teow? What's the best Hokkien Mee? It's difficult to say. Your best may not be my best.
They're just all different.
Yeah.
And I have noticed that every single stall or restaurant or vendor specializes in pretty much one thing. They may offer other things, but they have one specialty that's what they make.
Yeah.
The person next to them does not make the same thing. And the person down the street does not make the same thing. Everyone has, it's very diverse and very unique offerings.
Beautiful, yeah.
And it worries me a little bit that if that person stops making that one thing, that it might disappear.
Yeah.
I hope that's not the case. But let's take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk more about food tourism and the culture of Penang. Stay with us.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Seeing a need to help people sort through all the misinformation about healthy eating, Whole Foods Market added a seventh core value: to promote the health of our stakeholders through healthy eating education. In our stores, we give you the tools you need for choosing the most nutritious foods and healthy recipes, as well as offering classes with nutritionists and cooking coaches to help inspire good health and well-being. Stop by your local store today and learn more about our Health Starts Here program and wellness clubs, or online at wholefoodsmarket.com/healthstartshere.
I'm Sam Edwards, and I listen to Heritage Radio Network.
All right, we are back. I'm Brianna Kurtz, and you are listening to Native on Heritage Radio. And today I am talking to Pearlie Key about Penang, Malaysia. So let's just pick up where we left off. Again, just talking more about your work as a food, as an instructor. What are some of the things that people are most surprised about when you get them in the kitchen and they're starting to cook Malay food?
Okay. It's basically for the locals. When they are using the local herbs and spices, they use it and they take so much for granted.
Mm.
They never realize there's so much health benefits to what they are eating. But I'm very, very privileged as a child that my aunts, my cousin sisters, my cousins and my mom died when I'm 3 years old. So I live from aunt to aunt, and they are the ones who is instrumental to my cooking, yeah? Very early in life, I have to learn how to do cooking and food preparation in the kitchen. And believe you me, I always tell people I graduated from the University of Hard Knocks. I get knocks every time. I get hard stares. I get policeman eye looks. Yeah, and those tastes that I have from my childhood never left me. Yeah, so about 10 years ago, I started to realize that the food I'm not eating, the food that I used to eat when I'm young. And that tells me that it's time for me to go back and eat the food that I have been eating. And I started to do that and realized there's so much healthier, and I can remember when I cook it, I can remember all the taste coming back, the right techniques of doing it, and that's how it gets done. And you can really enjoy so much flavor exploding in your mouth. Yeah, you can actually dream about it. Those kind of food. These are food that I grew up with. I can even have a simple cup of tea, but it will take me back to my younger days because of how they brew the tea. You know, even rice noodle, how we grind the noodles and all that. So sometimes these are things that say, oh no, no, no. If I just let it go, it will be going off.
It will disappear.
What you said just now about a lot being disappearing, it is true. Whether I like it or not, it is just going away from me. Mm. I can't help it. But what I can do is try to teach and share in my cooking class as much as I can. And I share with them the health benefits of using all fresh ingredients and eating a lot of wholesome food, meaning to say as little processed food as you can. That's what I'm eating from young. That's what my grandma would do. Example is, I don't want to sound very harsh, I have gone back to eating lard, cooking with lard, cooking with chicken fat, not so much cooking with processed oil. Yeah, and I find that I actually use very little oil now because I'm using the unprocessed oil.
And that's a health thing?
Or? It's a health thing.
Okay.
And you can see me, I'm not putting a lot of weight.
You look
yeah? great. I'm not putting a lot of weight. And I account to eating correctly. Yeah, I account to eating correctly. And believe you me, I eat a lot. I eat and I snack a lot because sometimes, maybe just two meals, but maybe four snacks. We snacks a lot, yeah?
And always in the kitchen.
Always in the kitchen,
well, speaking of snacks, I have seen something here that I haven't encountered other places. What can you tell me about Malaysia and especially Penang's obsession with nutmeg?
Oh, nutmeg. Did you like it?
I thought it was very interesting. I did like it. I had the pickle kind.
Yeah, candy.
Yeah, the little snack. But I've seen the syrup.
Yeah.
And how? What else?
Yeah. Nutmeg, pineapple, nutmeg, and a few more are a very local thing. Yeah. So the nutmeg, you might see these, but presently it's not in season.
Mm.
Very little because of the weather being very hot, yeah? But when it's in season, the nutmeg fruit, it looks like a small pear. Yeah, half of the size of a small pear. And when it ripens, it cracks open, and there you are, the seed. And covering the seed is a layer of maize. The maize is very expensive, because it is good for people with arthritis and rheumatism.
So and, medicinal.
Yeah, it's purpose. Very medicinal. Believe you me, all our food for us are medicinal. Anything we put in our mouth must heal some part of our body every day. Food should be your medicine, yeah? So we will resort to eating naturally. And so when the nutmeg, when you use the maize, when they look at all the whole fruit that has broken up, the fruit itself, the flesh, what do you do with it? So some of us use it, crush it up and liquidize, and then you eat as a fruit juice. Some of us brew it to make it into a cordial. Some of us cut it up, pickle it, cook it with salt first, dry it, and then candied it with sugar, and there you have candied nutmeg, yeah, and that doesn't stop just at nutmeg. Mangoes, a lot of berries, things that you have not had before.
And I think that that's a perfect example of something else that I've seen, not just in Penang, but in Asia in general, is just using everything, being creative, finding ways to use the whole ingredient or the whole animal, or and I've also noticed, you know, as far as trash collecting, it's definitely not a formalized system as we have in the West. But I've also noticed there just isn't as much trash because you're using everything.
Yes.
You're not throwing half of it away.
Yeah.
So when you do have a bag of trash, it's a tiny little bag. And in the West, we throw, you know, I think 40% of our food is wasted. So it's
too
no
much,
wonder.
Too much packaging.
And packaging.
Yeah, too much.
I just think it's really interesting. So I want to go touch on a couple of things before we run out of time. Let's start with, while we're still on the topic of food, we had them the other night for dinner, the economy noodles.
Oh.
So I have two questions about the economy noodles. The first question is, what is it?
Mm-hmm.
And the second question is, if you could tell me about the different types of noodles and how they're made in that dish.
Wow. You got to go back to China. Your pasta comes from Marco Polo, also from China. Yeah. So basically here, we use a lot of bihun. Bihun is rice vermicelli. Then we got yellow noodle. The economy one will be rice noodle, we call kuay tiao, is flattened, yeah, and they added some oil to it so that it won't stick. So for the economy noodle, these are the cheapest to eat. If a laksa bowl costs 3 ringgit, then the economy stir-fried noodle like bihun, rice noodle and kuay tiao would only cost 150 to 2 ringgit.
So pretty much almost anyone can always get it nice...
It's called economy, means to say everyone could afford to eat it. And if you don't want to spend too much money and you want to fill your stomach, that's what you will eat.
And still very healthy.
And still very healthy, yeah. I just love that too. It's simple, yeah.
It's simple, and it's one another thing I notice is with street food culture, you sometimes can't have it taken away. Mm-hmm. Like, you need to sit right there and eat it. But I noticed at that particular stall, like, people are coming up on their bikes and they're just grabbing their noodles and going. So it travels well, and it's just fast and easy and cheap.
It helps because we are a warm country, tropical country, yeah? So when you come to the stall, it's not like you are cold and you want warm food, yeah? I know how it's like if you are in winter and then you want your food warm, yeah? You'll be shivering and you want warm food, yeah? But here, you're already so hot, and if they serve you cold, you go back, you eat just room temperature food, yeah? The only thing we really eat very hot will be our soups. Even on a hot day, we still want to slurp our hot soups.
I noticed that.
Yeah.
It's a little tough for me. It feels like it's about 115 degrees here. I think every time I step into the sun, I hear my skin starting to sizzle. But I think maybe it's my imagination, but it's quite warm, but it's beautiful. I love it. Okay, sorry. Let's get back to the economy noodles. So the rice vermicelli, the flat noodles, a little bit of oil so it doesn't stick. And then the other noodle you were describing.
Yellow noodle. Mm-hmm. It's made from wheat flour. That will be yellow noodle. The wheat flour thing, it will be have some uses egg to give it a very nicer flavor. The other one will have no egg. So there's a choice. So people who are vegetarians, they will be not using the ones with the egg. So there are lots of choices. And we also have, we never stop there, you know, we have things like gifu mi, things like that, that they use it in strings and they dry it or they deep fry it. Yeah, and then when you come, they do a sizzling noodle, that kind of noodle.
What I love, though, is that when you have the wide flat noodle and then you have the vermicelli, like the thinner one, and then you have the crispy noodle that's been dried and fried, you have all these different textures in one bite, and it just makes for a really interesting, they all hold the sauce differently. Yeah. And like you said, there's that little bit component of the egg, so I just think it ends up being very diverse for an economy plate.
Yeah. What I like about our Asian food, to be really honest, is our portions are small. When the portions are small, you can try a few variety, maybe two or three. Yeah, as a teenager from 20 to 30 years old, one bowl of noodle is not enough. So you can eat three bowls. But if you give a massive bowl, and then you gobble it up, it become a trend to just eat one bowl and then you can't try the rest. You know, so what I like our food is that it's not too big. That's
well, like I said, I had four breakfasts this morning, so I can attest to that from a personal experience. Well, before we run out of time, I want to touch on some more cultural aspects. As we mentioned, there's the Chinese influence here, there's the Malays, there's the Indians, and all of that has religious connotations associated with it as well.
Yes.
You have it's a Muslim country, so they're not eating any pork. You have the Indians who are not eating the beef because it's holy, the cow. Yeah. You yourself are Buddhist. I know that you don't eat meat personally. So it seems to me that, you know, chicken and fish are definitely kind of running the show here.
Yes, chicken, fish, prawns.
And how can you tell me about just how the different, not just the ethnicities, but the religions influence all the food as well?
I guess we are very tolerant people. A lot of humility in all of us, we respect each other's religion, and if we should be invite a Muslim to our house. For example, I'm Chinese. We invite a Muslim to our house, and we know that he would not want to drink from our glass and all that. We will buy packet bottle drinks and things to serve to them. We are very mindful, yeah? And if the same case goes for us when we go to their house. If we go and they know that we don't take beef, they will tell us, this is a beef dish, but for you, I prepared chicken. Mm. So the sincerity to serve you is very high. Yeah, so our people are very, very humble, and they will go all out to entertain you. Yeah.
And I think that also that carries over to, it's always someone's festival, or it's always somebody, it's always a holiday for somebody. Yeah. So everyone's always getting to eat holiday food.
It's very fascinating. People, I have cooking, I do cooking classes every day. All my guests, they are from all over the world. America, Europe, England, Australia. They always ask me, you have 14 public holidays. That's the most we have ever got. Nobody in other countries have so many holidays. That's how much we respect each other. Mm. And we enjoy each other's holidays. And we go to each other's open house. When we have New Year celebration, we invite each other and we have open house. Isn't that amazing? That speaks a lot, you know, that we are so tolerant. And even what you can see is like our street festivals. It can be like Thai Pusam. Thai Pusam is actually an Indian festival where the devotees of Lord Ganesh actually came to compensate their vows. They come and repay their vows in terms of skewering their mouth, piercing their body, things like that. But believe you me, if you have a good friend as a neighbor who is an Indian, who sees you very sick, he will say, can I take you to an Indian temple? Can I pray for you? And then this Chinese man will say, yeah, I'm so sick already. I really feel I prayed everything. And then I'm still not well. Okay, you pray for me. If your God can help me, I will go and pray to him, and I do what I can. So this kind Indian man will go and pray, come back with a coconut, with some wild betel nut leaf and some holy ashes, and say, oh, I've gone to the temple, and this is what I've prayed for you, and then dab the holy ashes on his head. And then, believe you me, this man got cured. And he said, you know, I've got well. What shall I do now? What can I do? Because I was so sick, you know, I was like sick for 3 months. Now I'm well. What should I do? You know, I'm so grateful. And this man said, okay, this year Thai Pusam, I'm going to carry a urn of milk. You can come and join me. And then this Chinese man, come Thai Pusam, he will go to with the Indian man to the temple, been bathed by the turmeric water to get himself cleansed up. And then he will carry the meal up to our botanic gardens, the waterfall temple, and say a word of thanks and pour the meal on the God to tell God that he is grateful for granting him safe recovery, things like that. Yeah.
Oh, I love
that. So these are all the interchange. It can also happen to a Chinese man telling an Indian man. It can also happen to a Chinese man asking help from a Malay man who will take him to their spirit medium. Things like that. It happens here.
Well, I love all those intersections of food and tradition and culture. We are about out of time, so Pearlie, I could talk to you all day about Penang and Malaysia. There's so much more. Maybe we'll have to do it again in the future. But thank you so much for sharing with me about your city.
You are most welcome, Brina. I just love taking you around. You are so... I hope I have been a good guide to you to share some of my experience. These are very personal. And thank you very much for showing... allowing me listening ear to listen to my stories. Yeah, thank you so much.
And you have a beautiful city, and you have been an amazing host. So,
I think the whole of Penang is like this. I speak for all of my people. Our people are very warm.
Wonderful.
Yes.
All right. Well, that's all for Native this week. See you next week. Same time, same place, live at 11 a.m. every Thursday right here on Heritage Radio. In the meantime, you can learn more about my trip to Malaysia, including pictures of what Pearlie and I discussed today, plus other Asian adventures online at BKFAF or my website, BriannaKurtz.com.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.